And welcome to Rusted Junk, the 80s movie podcast. Do you dream about gremlins? How hard can you actually die? Does Barry Manilow know that you raid his wardrobe? If those mean something to you, then you're in the right place. This season, we're all about a dip into the 90s. So over to Charlie, Amanda, Joe and Dom for the film.
Continuing our trip into the 90s, we will be covering The Truman Show. Truman Show is a 1998 film directed by Peter Weir and written by Andrew Niccol. It stars Jim Carrey as Truman Burbank, a man who unknowingly lives in a fabricated reality that is broadcast as a 24/7 live television show. Truman's life is controlled by Christoph, played by Ed Harris. The show's creator and executive producer, who manipulates every aspect of Truman's environment, from the weather to his relationships. Truman gradually becomes suspicious of his surroundings and embarks on a quest to discover the truth about his world. Let's roll the trailer.
Comments are still headed.
What else is on?
Yeah, let's do what else.
Coming to you now from the largest studio ever constructed, it's The Truman Show!
Yeah!
Good morning!
Good morning!
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
What if?
No scripts, no cue cards.
Morning, Spencer!
How's it going?
What if you were watched every moment of your life?
How many cameras you got there in that town?
5,000.
I believe Truman is the first child to have been legally adopted by a corporation.
That's correct.
Brilliant.
What if everyone you knew was pretending?
Hi, honey. Look what I got at the checkout. Dishwasher safe.
That's amazing.
What if your world was make-believe?
Cue the sign. While the world he inhabits is counterfeit.
I'm not allowed to talk to you.
That's how I look. Not your type.
There's nothing fake about Truman himself.
What if you didn't know it? Until now.
A lot of strange things have been happening.
Stand by ring cam.
Is he looking at us?
Do you think he knows?
I think I'm mixed up in something. Something big.
Oh, we accept the reality with which we're presented.
Everybody's pretending, Truman. Get out of here. Come and find me.
Truman?
Truman! Truman!
Anything happen?
No.
Mm-hmm.
You may find yourself in another part of the world.
It's like the whole world revolves around me. Everybody seems to be in on it.
I'm going away for a while.
You may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife. You may ask yourself, how did I get here?
I'm not in on it, Truman, because the last thing that I would ever do is lie to you.
Fade up music. That's our hero shot. He's gone. Find him. Truman, where are you going?
You can do it.
How do we stop him?
Give me some lightning.
Is that the best you can do?
Cut transmission.
I like your pen. I was wondering that myself.
Jim Carrey. The Truman Show. Watch what happens.
That is one long trailer. What did everyone think of it?
That trailer was a disgrace. For once, I've got strong opinions about the trailer.
Why?
I don't care less. Because it undermines the film. It reveals way too much. And
yes,
I think one of the things that's, we'll talk about the film, one of the things that's great about this film is it's quite brave filmmaking. Until about an hour into the film, it doesn't really lay out exactly what's going on. You have to infer and deduce and figure out, and enjoy the ride. And that trailer just walks you through it. And undermines the film, shows way too much, should be much more enigmatic than that. So if that's really the official trailer, then that's absolute bobbing.
That was the official trailer. I did have a look. There was a teaser trailer. I mean, but yeah, the official trailer that went out was that one. People went to see it accordingly.
Yes. So 0 out of 10 for the trailer.
Wow.
Well, I think back then we didn't have access to the internet, so we couldn't see the trailer over and over. I guess we could watch it on VHS, though, if we recorded it. But I think that, if this trailer came out today, people would notice right away that they kind of show the ending. There's a lot of scenes from the ending in this trailer.
You're going to have to do better than that. Yeah.
But I think when you go in the movie, you kind of forget all that. You just kind of watch it and just...
Yeah, I would say.
Go with it.
It's none of our choices, this film. So, Dom, do you want to describe why it's none of our choices and whose it is?
Yeah, so this is This is listener feedback, so thank you to all of our listeners for your ideas to support this season and the pod in general. And this is definitely one of our special listeners. Actually, viewers would be more accurate. As somebody from a slightly younger generation, she consumes the pod on YouTube, so she'll be at some point in the not too distant future looking at all of our mugs on her screen. She has been known to do it when she drives the car as well, which is probably a step too far and not recommended. So Frankie, if you're watching this on your car, please, for God's sake, don't
pull
do
over.
That. Yes, it's not responsible.
Just don't get caught.
No, don't not get caught. Just don't do it, full stop.
Don't encourage the behaviour. It's dangerous for many reasons on many levels.
We appreciate the numbers, don't we? It does help our negotiations with Spotify, but we draw the line at doing it in the car. So, Frankie, don't do it. Frankie is a loyal viewer, advocate of this pod, and has given me plenty of ideas and input for films we've watched in the past and for future films as well. So another one of my 90s films for this season is influenced very much by her choice as well. But she chose this. She gave us a choice of two, Truman Show or Fargo, both excellent choices from the 90s. Mm. We went with this one because I think it gives us a broader discussion to have. And, I'm very curious as to what other people, my fellow hosts, think of this film. But Fran, as I'm sure you will be watching soon, we love you. Thank you very much for this choice.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope you enjoy the pod. And if you're out there, if you're a fan of the pod and you're also called Frankie, because that also seems to be a prerequisite these days. We've got Joe's nephew, my friend. So, yeah, then please write in with your ideas and suggestions as well. We hope we've done the Truman Show justice for you, Fran.
Wow. On that intro, do you want to go first? Or shall I?
Your pod, your rules.
You go first.
All right. So just a little taster of what's to come. So I love films like this, alternate realities, whether it's The Matrix or Groundhog Day. It's kind of an adjacent genre to kind of dystopian post-apocalyptic films, I think, where reality, the day-to-day world that we see is somehow changed fundamentally. So I approach this film, really looking forward to reviewing it today. But I don't know how many times I've seen it, probably eight times. It's my eighth rewatch. It's only this time that I've noticed something really fundamental about the film, which has always passed me by in the past. And this is, it's a love story. This is how I would, the genre I would put it in. It's romance or a romantic comedy. So for me, I really enjoyed the rewatch because I saw it with a different, fresh pair of eyes. And for me, this is a really lovely romantic story at the heart of this film. I think this is brave. Are we giving our scores? Are we doing that? And it's a controversial area.
Yeah,
what are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing scores.
So for me, this is brave, confident, creative filmmaking, full of ideas. And for me, it's a 9 out of 10.
Wow. I'm going to go with Amanda next, only because she's the only one who'd never seen it. So I'm actually dying to find out. I couldn't figure out, but I'll just to find out what you thought of it.
Okay, so it might be a good idea if I go last.
Oh, okay. Joe?
It means I'm up, huh?
Yep.
Mm.
So, I haven't seen it since it was out in theaters. So it was kind of nice to be able to watch it again. I did like it. And I liked Jim Carrey's performance. And this will probably be in trivia, was this his first serious movie?
I would say so. I mean, looking at the list, yeah, pretty much.
That's The Pet Detective, wasn't it? So, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Pet Detective was his first serious movie.
No.
Was it right after Pet Detective, or did he do Dumb and Dumber? Yeah. Well, no, it was good. I mean, the one thing that I hate when comedians, like, because you have Bill Murray and you have other ones that they feel like the need to do something dramatic to show their range and everything, that we kind of miss what could have been a really good comedy movie when they start to focus on, again, this is my chance at an Oscar. I'm not going to get an Oscar for doing a comedy. And I think he's good in it. My only problem is he still is Jim Carrey in it at times. He'll like give that quirky little face or like a weird expression. But for the most part, he plays it very serious. He plays it very well. It reminded me of something that Jimmy Stewart would do, like back in the day, maybe something with Frank Capra.
Good chat.
And I would say, like, my only thing when I was watching this, I thought it would be interesting. I don't know what year this is supposed to take place in. Like, Dom was saying that it's probably like an alternate reality or something like that. I think it would have been interesting if it took place in the future, like where everybody that's watching it is like advanced, like in the future, and they're watching like an old 20th century time period where, you know, he doesn't know that things have advanced in technology and that, you know, we have like, you know, flying cars and all that stuff. You know, maybe it's a little crazy. Maybe it would have been too expensive, but I thought that would have been interesting if that the reality that he's living in is not the same reality that's outside. So when he does go outside, he'll be in even a bigger shock. And this was another thing too, that I think I might've experienced a Mandela effect, unless they showed deleted scenes. I could have sworn at the end of this movie, when he walks out, he meets that girl.
I tend to agree with you, but I couldn't find anything.
It's implied that he does, isn't it? Because she basically leaves her house and runs off to the studio.
Well, while I'd like to say, you know, Dom's love story analogy or analysis of that is probably spot on. And we will talk about this later, but what's life like for him when he goes through that door?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's definitely something that I want to explore as well. That I think the ending to the film is great, but there's no way that he would be able to adapt to that life. He'd be severely psychologically damaged after this experience. He'd spend the rest of his life in court suing the arse off the producers for what they've done to him. And he'd never be able to walk down the street again, would he? But
he'd never know if going through the door is part of the show and he's going into another show.
Oh, yeah, no, he's going to be seriously screwed up for the rest of his life, isn't he? That's true.
Well, if they were able to broadcast in the movie that this was like the first baby that was adopted by like a production company, I guess it's legal in that universe or alternate timeline. But I don't know. I said, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought, you know, there's no such thing as a bad actor in this movie.
Well, everybody did their part. True.
Yeah. The director did a good job. So I'll give it an 8.5.
The 0.5s, Joe. Yeah. I see. Right. Well, if you're going to go last, then that means it's me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a big fan of Jim Carrey, and we'll go through them in roll call, but I don't think there's any. I previously thought that Jim Carrey's best film was The Cable Guy, because every time I watch that, it just gets better and better for me.
I don't know about that.
Well, you know, we each have our.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's a brilliant film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Commercially, box office, it didn't do an awful lot. But then, you know, along comes him playing probably the most serious character. I mean, we'll go into obviously some of the later ones, and I think Dom, you might have some Oscar bants. I'm looking at you. Nope, maybe. I don't know. Okay, good to go on the Oscar.
Tonight is the night of the Academy Awards, after all, isn't it?
It is indeed.
I brought my A game or my O game.
But then
You're not in the dicky though, Dom. It's a bit disappointing.
No, although I have dressed up for this pod, obviously. I was actually on a work call. That's the sort of guy that I am. I an abject failure that I had to do a work call earlier tonight on Mother's Day on a Sunday evening. So,
God.
I know, right?
Medication.
I know, but I've drinking a Negroni. This is also in honor of Fran. I'm giving her a little toast. It's her favorite drink. So, if I have too many more of these, I won't be able to stay up until 2 a.m. and watch.
What is it?
Oppenheimer's. March over the face of everybody else. It's a Negroni, so it's Campari, gin and vermouth. It's a brilliant cocktail because it's got no mixers. It's also just pure alcohol. What's that?
Yeah, you're going to make it to the end of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, no. Just
are you sure?
One or two of these, just a sharpener. Yeah.
Actually, I saw some photos of old, like with yourself and Charles. Was it your leaving too, Charles?
Yeah, that was one of them, yeah.
Seriously, oiled, should we say. Yeah.
For the benefit of the audience, has been a reunion has been planned over the last couple of days for some of the capital, some of our ex-employers' business in Nottingham. And Charlie and I are off to Nottingham in June, aren't we, to make a trip down memory lane?
We are indeed, and I can't wait.
Anyway.
Joe, score.
Anyway, oh, we're not dwelling on that. Okay.
No, no, no. Eight and a half. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you're in the middle of mine. Temporarily bamboozled with the Nottingham meetup. So I previously thought it was Cable Guy, but as you said, Dom, you know, taking a chance on something like this, it can massively backfire. And suddenly you find yourself in, you know, trying to, you know, having the accusation.
Well, Madonna territory.
You're trying too hard. And, you know, you're right, Joe. There's a bit of gurning in this, but there ain't nowhere near as much as Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, anything like that. It's all very much toned down. Adding to that, you know, you've got Ed Harris as well. But I think it's fair to say that when you look at the how well this film has been received, you know, you've got IMDb, it's 8.1 out of 10, based on nearly a million votes. Rotten Tomatoes, critic score of 95%, audience score of 92%. You know, you're looking into that sort of territory of the gamble paid off. It was $60 million budget. It made, I think, memory, I didn't write it down, but I think it made 4.5 times its money. So it's near a sort of 280 million worldwide. Well, then the gamble paid off. Because not only do we get a film that shows a bit of risk-taking, extremely good performances across the board, but also something that people still can relate to and still resonates with today. So with that in mind, I'm going to go definitely with the Rotten Tomatoes, because I always had it in mind that it was a 9 out of 10. Definitely for me. There are flaws in it, and that's why I can't give it the full 10, but... Did I enjoy watching it again? Absolutely. And the final thing was Amy started watching it, even though she had to go to bed after half an hour. And she was transfixed. She was hooked with it and just went, oh, I definitely want to watch the rest of this. So, I don't know. The Truman, the Burbank effect. Anyway, here we go. Hopefully not to ruin the party. I don't know.
Drum roll. Yeah, go on. I'm really intrigued. Because I know, next spoiler alert, you're not the Jim Carrey fan, are you, Amanda?
I hate Jim Carrey.
Could not be a very promising starting point there, but go for it.
Okay.
He was less irritating in this movie, but I did still find him irritating, I'm afraid.
What?
Yeah, sorry. My washing machine's just like on its spin. Sorry. I'm not sat on it or anything. It's just making a noise.
Oh, we can't hear it. That's fine.
Oh, that's okay. Good. Lovely. So I couldn't work out what this movie was trying to do. Sorry. You talked about it being a comedy. I didn't find it comedic. I found it not hitting a mark of what I expected it to be. Sorry, it's all going to go off beeping. So I was a bit, oh, I don't know. I felt like the movie didn't give me what I needed it to. And the reason I say that, I mean, you know, the stylizing was great, you know, the fact that it was, you know, a sort of panoptic view of his life, 24/7 cameras, you know, it was obviously released in 1998 before, you know, this massive rise of reality TV, mass surveillance, our social media as it is now, and people willingly put themselves on camera almost 24/7. It's before these influencers, obsession with celebrity status, you know. So it was a very forward-thinking movie in that respect, but I just felt it just didn't go where I wanted it to go. So,
it's going to be, it's not going to be good, fellas.
Yeah. It feels like it should have been a darker movie for me.
Funny you say that, yeah. Okay. I think that's definitely valid, yeah.
I wanted him to show more real, sort of real effects of being of realizing that his reality is not a normal reality and everyone's acting, because that would absolutely do your head in completely, wouldn't it? And to kind of come to terms with that would be psychologically damaging. But it's almost as if it was, oh, it's okay. Yeah, I realize, you know, that this is all fake and I'm just going to escape and I'm just going to try and leave wherever it is I am. But then he finds the stairs and opens the door and then supposedly disappears into our world, our real world.
Did you want him to kill people?
Yeah, I was wondering what were you expecting?
I don't know. I just didn't feel it was fully representative of what it was trying to do, really. So for me, it was an okay film. Would I watch it again? No, I wouldn't, I'm afraid. So I don't agree with you. I'm not giving it a high score. I'm giving it a 5. Just because I felt some of the other actors were okay in it. And, you know, I like the imagery of it. And the kind of plot overall was engaging. But I just felt it was off the mark. I'm really sorry. Because it's
no, look, don't apologise. Because I think that criticism is perfectly valid. For me, I think the film is still a real success despite that. But I think you have to acknowledge, I think, two things. One is, it is implausible, yeah? You can, if you've got a film like Groundhog Day or The Matrix where there's some big rule change in the universe, you know, the day just repeats because of God, or the world's been taken over by AI and we're all, you know, spoiler alert, in pods, and then that's one thing. But there is no way that this this version of the reality could exist. He wouldn't get to 30-odd. On that little town and still be there. So you have to suspend your disbelief, I think, that it would be fooled in such a way. It is implausible. I think, secondly, your point about the darkness is true. All of these films, they're a world where there are no consequences because it's not real. So in Groundhog Day, for example, you see him rob banks and commit suicide. He does these things, but it doesn't take it to its kind of natural conclusion, which is, in a world of no consequences, you can do anything that you want and get away with it. And that, I think, even if you don't get some real dark spaces of what that might look like, I think you have to go a little bit darker, perhaps, than this film does. Now, obviously, there are commercial constraints. It has a PG rating in the UK, but I think it's valid to say that it doesn't look deeply enough at that. And indeed, earlier drafts of the film were intended to be darker, and I think probably would have been made for a slightly more interesting film. Just, you know, I think the film, don't get me wrong, I scored it 9 out of 10. I think it succeeds despite that. But somewhere out there waiting to be made is a film of this caliber, of this type, which really goes further, I think. And
I think Charlie Brooker's series, what was it called?
Black Mirror.
Yeah. His series of, you know, the whole, oh, I need to get so many likes every day, or, you know, swipe left, swipe right, that kind of thing. His warped sort of idea of how social media influences life in that sort of depiction of what he's trying to say, I think that has taken it, you know, massive steps beyond this film. I mean, this is filmed 26 years ago, obviously. So we've had a lot of technological, you know, advances. Life is so much different than it was 26 years ago. So there's a whole generation that don't understand not having an internet and being on camera and being an influencer and watching them. So I think it'd be interesting to see what a member of that sort of new generation that we've got now, whether it's a millennial or not, I don't know if that's too late, it would probably be after the millennials. So what they would think of it, or if it actually doesn't resonate with them at all, because they have that already, essentially.
That's a good point.
This is why I think it's a brilliant choice of film to discuss, because we're going to unpack all that as we get into it. But just, I heard you say that your daughter enjoyed the film, and I watched it with my 12-year-old and she really enjoyed watching it as well. So small sample size and all that, but with those two, it did capture their imagination, I think.
Well, while you're away at work this week, I'll watch the rest of it with her.
Oh, okay.
I'll watch it again. Yeah, definitely. how she'll take it with the twist and everything, because I was giving her little bits because she was getting slightly confused, so I was giving her little tidbits here and there. But yeah, well, on that note, should we go into roll call?
Yep.
Let's do roll call. Here we go. Roll call. So we've kind of like done Ed Harris. If you want to go back and listen to Ed Harris, and we'll get to him in a moment. But when we did The Abyss, we went through that. But
he wasn't the first choice, though, was he?
Ed Harris, no, it was Dennis Hopper.
But there was a disagreement, wasn't there?
I don't quite remember. I didn't get that piece of trivia from mine. I did read it. But yeah, I noticed there was Dennis Hopper, and Jack Nicholson was touted at some point.
Oh, I didn't know about him.
Played the sort of Christoph character.
Well, thank God it was Ed Harris, I think, because I think he's excellent in this.
Me too. You know, those two are great actors, but he just hit it out of the park.
He rarely makes a bad decision, I would say. He rarely makes a bad film. And we will get to him, because obviously a little bit of an update since last time we covered. But
just indulge me before we move on, because I know we're going to move on. But just on Ed Harris, I'll do my Azkaban's now. This film got nominated for 3 Oscars, Best Actor for Jim Carrey, Best Director for Peter Weir, and Best Supporting Actor for Ed Harris. And of the three, I think he's the one that's got the strongest case for having won Ed Harris. So he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his role in this film. Other nominees were Robert Duvall for A Civil Action, Jeffrey Rush for A Shakespeare in Love, Billy Bob Thornton for A Simple Plan, and James Coburn for Affliction. And it's James Coburn that won. I think Ed Harris deserved it out of those. I agree. I'm an expert on all four of the other films, but Shakespeare in Love, bit of a travesty that it was up for those, all the awards it got that year. But yeah, I'd have happily given him the Oscar for this one.
Style over substance. Yeah. Well, out of the Oscar bounce, do you want to say who won, what Jim Carrey won and then he didn't?
So Jim Carrey, don't think he's ever won an Oscar, has he? He's been nominated. He got nominated for Truman Show of 99. Other nominees were Ian McKellen for Gods and Monsters, Nick Nolte for Affliction, Edward Norton for American History X, and Robert Benigni, is that how you pronounce it, for Life is Beautiful, which won, and very famous Oscar acceptance speech when he was comforting, I think is the right way to put it, on the stage. I think Ed Norton for American History X would have been my choice. That is a hell of a film.
Yeah, I agree too.
It does. Go on. Sorry.
I was just saying to complete, given that I have gone full Oscar bounce already, Peter Weir lost out on Best Director to Steven Spielberg for Saving Private Ryan, which personally I think is fair enough. I think Saving Private Ryan is.
That was epic.
Yeah, what a film. I mean, maybe for the first 20 minutes alone, he deserved the Oscar.
Yeah, that's good. It's very good. I had, as of 2023, Jim Carrey's the only actor, male or female, to win the Golden Globe for Best Lead Actor in both the drama and comedy stroke musical categories without being nominated for an Academy Award.
No, because he's been nominated twice for Truman Show and also Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Right, okay. See, you can't trust the trivia these days. You just got to...
Depends on when that was written.
Well, it said as of 2023.
Oh, 2023, okay.
So, okay.
Sources, don't read anything.
Well, they're quite insistent on it, but
Jim Carrey, I'm just going to say it, Amanda. I think he is a very good actor and a very important actor as well. I would go so far as to say he's an important actor. If you look at the kind of late 90s, early noughties, he is the highest profile actor in Hollywood, and he makes some brave film choices. He makes a fortune as well. I bet I don't know this, but I'm sure he must be the highest paid actor during some of that time at least. And as we discuss his filmography in a minute, he has got some excellent films under his belt, and a range of films as well, from Dumb and Dumber, which I love. I think that's an amazing film, to Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind, which is my personal favorite film of his. Very, very different films, and that shows his range, I think.
That is a good film.
For me, Dumb and Dumber is my favorite comedy of all time, and
really,
nothing even comes close.
Oh, you see, I can't.
If you've got a Jim Carrey thing, then whatever we say,
I don't.
Is going to be no. I mean, Mand has.
Okay,
and that's fine. I mean, we could be sitting here now discussing Tom Hanks, and I'd be going, nope, Bachelor Party, pretty much where it started, pretty much where it ended. And so I'd be the odd one out.
The thing that spoiled Jim Carrey for me was the mask.
Well, that was one of his first. I think he did Ace Ventura and then The Mask.
He did Ace Ventura, The Mask, yeah.
And then it was just like he was everywhere. And
yeah, that's true.
And I just disliked watching him because he was just gurning and goofy.
Well,
and I just wasn't in this movie, but I just find him gurning and goofy still, even though he wasn't in this movie. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair, but
no, he is.
He's not my cup of tea. Just like Bill Murray isn't my cup of tea.
He's a little over the top at times. I mean, most of the times, actually. I did want to say, so this is Roll Call, right? And I don't know if you guys had gotten this show, this series. It was called In Living Color. Did you ever see
it? I'd heard of it, and we got occasionally it would appear on Channel 4, but not regularly.
That's where he got his start.
Oh, okay.
In Living Color. Like, he was like, I think he was one of the two token white people in this cast. And it was done by Damian Wayans, I think, or was it Marlon Wayans? I forget, one of the Wayans brothers. And it was a fun show, you know, because like at the time, that's when the Fox network started premiering and they just kept trying to do something different. So they created like a comedy skit show similar to like Saturday Night Live or Fridays or something like that. But, you know, mostly made of black comedians and black actors.
All right.
And he was really the only white guy. There was a white girl in the show, but for some reason, he was the only one who really took off from there. And I always thought that was strange, Damon Wayans, again, he's done some, you know, movies, but nothing to the degree that Jim Carrey did. And then when Jim Carrey did Ace Ventura and Dumb and Dumber, yeah, like Amanda says, his face was everywhere.
It was.
Yeah.
And he was on all the talk shows and he could do no wrong. That's how I saw him as a start. And he was funny, but again, he does overdo it at times. Like he relies too much on the facial tics and the over exaggeration, but that's him. You know, I don't know if he's a billionaire, but he made a lot of money out of doing that crap. And
well, he commanded $20 million a movie, didn't he? That was his pay requirement. But for this movie, this one, he only had $12 million because he'd say, yeah, okay, I'll do it for 12.
Yeah. And when you look at it, when you look at his start, you know, he pops up in films. You just think, very odd. Peggy Sue Got Married, the sort of Back to the Future-esque film. The Deadpool, so he's been in a Dirty Harry film. Earth Girls Are Easy, Gina Davis.
But that was all prior,
and then Ace Ventura hits, boom. There it goes off. You've got Ace Ventura, The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, The Riddler in Batman Forever. No, one of your favourite films because of Val Kilmer. Well, not the favourite Batman film, but certainly because of that. Then you get The Wonderful Cable Guy, Liar Liar, this film. Then, as Dom pointed out, Man on the Moon, Eternal Sunshine, The Spotless Mind. Then you go The Majestic, which is a real treat. I remember seeing it at the time and thinking, that is a fantastic film. You get Bruce Almighty.
I need to see that.
It is good. Bruce Almighty, The Grinch, Yes Man, Kick-Ass 2, Series of Unfortunate Events, and more recently, Sonic the Hedgehog, of which number 3 is in production at the moment. So
Lemony Snicket and The Grinch, two great kids' films, and he's really good in them, I would say. I just think he's very versatile. I totally get that he's not your cup of tea, Amanda, and like my equivalent would be Robin Williams. I can barely enjoy a film that he's in because he's in it. Mm. But Dumb and Dumber, Cable Guy, Truman Show, Eternal Sunshine, standout films, I think. And he's a troubled individual, isn't he? You know, that manic energy comes from somewhere. And I think Man on the Moon, he stayed in character as Andy Kaufman
the entire
production of it. He grew a full beard, like Tom Hanks in Castaway, in a full-on beard. There was some controversy in his private life, shall we say, involving a girlfriend of his. So, you know, he's your classic kind of tortured poet, tortured actor. And I think, yeah, I think his screen filmography stands the test of time. And
does.
He's an interesting actor. And I think he's interesting in this. I think going back to our earlier conversation, he could have gone darker. I'd like to have seen a slightly darker vibe to this. But he's not the best thing in it. And we should probably get onto some of the other actors who I think steal the show.
Wow. Okay. Not sure. I've only got six. So, okay.
Six.
We've done Ed Harris. He's brilliant as discussed.
Well, so. I do. And I was going to say, Ed Harris, you know, even pops up in Top Gun Maverick and you go, still brings it. He's only in it for like 10 minutes, probably screen time of what, maybe 2 minutes. But he brings the Ed Harris to that role and adds to the success of that film, which, you know, you could say saved cinema. That was going to put The Abyss, The Rock, Westworld, Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
Oh, good film.
But yes.
But, did he win an Oscar for Apollo 13?
No, I think he's only ever been nominated. No, he lost out to Kevin Spacey for The Usual Suspects in 96. He also got nominated for The Truman Show, Pollock, and The Hours. So that was your pointless answer, The Hours. But yeah, it was a strong year that year. James Cromwell in Babe, Kevin Spacey, Usual Suspects, Tim Roth, Rob Roy, with the winner being Kevin Spacey.
Oh, no, okay. It's sad because if anyone deserves an Oscar, it's him.
Yep,
I mean, he better get a friggin', you know, Lifetime Achievement Award at some point. Like, they're giving one to Angela Bassett this year.
What?
Just because she lost Fear for Wakanda Forever, and she bitched and complained about it, made a stinky face, and now they're like, you know what? We'll give you a Lifetime Achievement Award next year. She's not even near close to death, you know? It just annoys me. He should have got one this year. Lifetime Achievement Award.
He's a white male of a certain age, so he's got no chance. Anyway,
he'll get one eventually, I hope, eventually. Before he dies.
Anyway, Laura Linney, his co-star in this. If I just said to you, Laura Linney, tell me what she's been in, I think this is where we get the British-American
divide.
Is that
who plays his wife?
Yes. What film comes to mind? Not TV series in this case. I know.
Oh, I'm just going to say Ozark.
Ozark is just an incredible TV series. Very, very, very
good. Have you all seen that?
I love it, yeah. She's brilliant in it. And to say one of the first things you see in it is her bare ass as she's getting blackmailed by her...
Really?
I can't remember exactly who blackmails her husband. Or there's a private detective, yeah. She's having an affair and you see her bare bottom. Actually, that's not the end of it either. So she's shagged doggy style. Can we say that on our pod? I don't know. But
really?
It's quite the contrast from this.
Rely on you, Dom. Can't
What's me? Joe going to watch as soon as we finish this podcast?
Yeah.
Opening episode.
No, I think, yeah, well, yeah, it is. Yeah,
it is an opening. Yes.
No, I think she's very attractive too. I'm surprised that her career didn't take off as much as it did.
But this is what's amazing. This is what's amazing.
Really, you don't agree with me?
She herself has been Oscar nominated 4 times. So who the fuck?
She's been no way, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait a minute, I'm looking at the list. The only one that I can think that she's been nominated for is Mystic River.
Yeah, Mystic River, so best supporting actress for that. But the others were all best actress, so you can count on me. She was a single mother wrestling with family and moral dilemmas, so sounds perfect. Yeah,
nobody, not even me, could tell you what it was about.
All right, Hiddensy, which I have seen, which is all about the sex professor. That makes it sound a bit kinky, doesn't it? The professor explored human sexuality is probably another way to put it. And then The Savages, grappling with the care of an elderly parent, she provided a raw look at the nuances of familiar obligation. So, yeah. So there might be obscure films she's been nominated for, but she has nevertheless been nominated for Academy Awards. She's a hell of an actress. So I think she's great in this. And she is the best thing in Ozark, I think.
I'd go along with that. Ooh. Yeah.
I disagree.
Well, obviously, because you've got the hots for Jason Bateman. So.
Wow.
Or that trailer park trash.
Or the girl.
She's also brilliant.
She's the best.
Yeah, I hate Jason Bateman.
Well, just watch the first start of Ozark and then just don't watch the rest. In that case. I've the list that I've got, I mean, they say the Oscars is out of touch, Dom. I couldn't have told you what the other two films, couldn't have told you what the last three films were about. But you've got Dave, you've got the very poorly conceived Michael Crichton adaptation of the Michael Crichton novel Congo, which is awful. Primal Fear, Mystic River. More famously, every Christmas we watch her in Love Actually. She's been in Frasier. She was in for 6 episodes. She had a big series, The Big C. And she was also in Sully with Tom Hanks playing his on-screen wife.
She's good at this film, though, Truman Show. Do we all agree on that?
Yes.
She is good.
Don,
Well, it's an unsympathetic character, isn't she? But she plays it well. Sorry, Joe.
No, I was going to say, Don, do you think she's attractive?
I would say she's cast well in this because I think she's supposed to be like an every woman, isn't she? She's like reasonably attractive, but she's not. Well, I'll tell you what, let me answer that question a different way. I think that the woman that Truman falls for, that we'll no doubt discuss in a minute, Lauren, Sylvia, whatever she's called, she is incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
And Laura Linney's character is more of your kind of, what do you say in America? White picket fence, suburban mom.
Yeah, but those are the good ones, you know.
Okay.
Because they're not really like that.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. I don't know if you want to elaborate.
Behind closed doors.
I've said too much on this podcast. I'm just going to leave it at that.
That's what people tune in for. Come on.
Yeah, that's all right.
Don't turn into Dom the Prude. Seriously, come on.
Dom the Prude. Spin it. About that.
Come on.
I thought there was a bit too much sex in this sex scene.
Come on.
I didn't say it like that. I'm not even sure that's actually
basic instinct. Words. He said there was too much sex in it.
No, that's not true.
Oh, viewers, listeners, you can make your own minds up. Should we go on to her while we're talking about that? Natasha McElroy, I believe it's pronounced. I mean, apart from this, anyone want to guess what else she's been in?
I looked at what she was in, and I really didn't recognize anything.
So you weren't a fan of the David Duchovny star series Californication?
Never seen it.
Which she played his long-suffering wife. She is, Dom, I have to agree, she is beautiful. She really is.
Eyes.
Yeah, well, it's everything. She's also in Ronin. She plays Kiefer Sutherland's wife in Designated Survivor, which is just gettable rubbish, but you know, you're entertained while you're watching it. And more recently, she's in the Halo TV series, which I refuse to watch because on the first episode of the first season, he takes his helmet off. And no, that's not a euphemism, but you'd never have Master Chief. The whole point of Halo is you don't know what he looks like. And in the episode one, mm-hmm. he went like that and went, women are all great, men are all pigs, and was on message.
Did he take his helmet off to polish it, Charlie? Or look, going back to this Natasha, whatever the hell she's called, Irish surname, so I'm not even going to attempt it.
She's Irish?
I think she's Irish, like heritage, yeah. But her, well, I don't know. You tell me how you pronounce McIoone. It's like impossible. Anyway, point I was trying to make is she's barely in this film. She's in it, I don't know if you added all the screen time up, what, 5, 6, 7 minutes, something like that. Steals the show, I think. She does have beautiful eyes, as you say, but what I love about her performance is that she makes it plausible that he can have this entire narrative, this entire reality constructed around him for his benefit and for the benefit of the audience. And she subverts that, and he falls in love with her from a chance encounter, and that then changes his whole life and his whole trajectory. And I just think that that's why I feel this is a love story, and it's a really powerful love story, because that can happen, you know, one look, one moment, one encounter can change your life and give you this path, this fork in the road. And and I thought she did it in a really believable way, and I thought that was kind of the essence of the film for me. And I, you know, other opinions are available, of course, and you know, I've watched this lots of times and not really picked up on this vibe before, but yeah, I thought she played her part brilliantly, and I'm just surprised she's not had a better career, because she's not just an attractive woman, which she is, but I thought she acted extremely well and was central to the whole structure.
Yeah, definitely. And when we finish roll call, which I will do quite quickly, I want to start with picking that bit up. about the two of them and about their relationship. So let's just finish that, and then just all I've got, the other two are Noah Emmerich, who played his best friend. He was in Beautiful Girls, Timothy Hutton. Uma Thurman. Yeah, that's good. It's an odd film because you've got Natalie Portman in it.
She always plays a really weird teenager that it hooks up with guys she shouldn't be going after.
Yeah. He was also in Copland and Super 8. And then
hang on. If we can move off from him, he's in a brilliant show which is criminally underrated. The Americans. It's not that big over here. Is it big in America, Joe? It's about
I never heard of it.
It's about these two KGB agents who are deep cover and, you know, to all intents and purposes pass for and appear to be American. It's really, really good if you're ever in the market for a new show. And he plays the FBI agent that's kind of, well, with no spoilers, but lives in their world, and he's really effective in that. So yeah, The Americans is a great TV show, really underrated.
Okay. Wow. Okay. And the last one I have is Holland Taylor, who played his mum. She's famous for 2 and a Half Men. I think it's massive over there, or was massive over there, Joe.
I never watched it because I just wasn't a fan of the series, but yeah, it was massive though.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the end of roll call. So I would like to pick up that point, as I said. Timings wise, how long do you think it's supposed to be before you know, his love of his life gets whisked off the beach by the man, you know, saying, "Oh, I'm a father," and she's having an episode and she does this, you're not the first guy, and then takes her away, and then he starts his quest or obsession to be with her again in Fiji because he thinks that that's where she's gone to. How long is it since then? Because if it's supposed to be about 10 years where he's a teenager and then this is in mid-20s, are we looking at Truman in his mid-20s, his mid-30s? I don't know. But whatever that timeline is, why is he taking so long?
Well, because his entire reality is constructed around him, isn't it? So, you know, he has this, I think it's either set in his last year of high school or early college, because he's studying, you know, the scene where he meets her and they run off to the beach together. They're studying for some exams, aren't they? And fast forward to later on in the film and he's married and has a job. So there's definitely an extended period of time in between those two events. But I suppose that's the point of the film, isn't it? That you don't question what you're presented with in life. You just take it at face value, and where everything is kind of geared towards you staying in your groove, in your lane, then how many of us do ever kind of step outside of that? How many of us do take bold decisions which really change our lives? How many of us just go with the flow? And I'm not trying to make it personal about anyone on this pod or to any of our listeners who are listening, but you know, that is life, isn't it? And that's why the film is an interesting, you know, as well as being entertaining, it's an interesting philosophical question, I think, really, which is, you know, how often do we challenge or question the reality of our lives and how they are? And he does towards the end of the film, but clearly he goes through a big chunk of time not doing so. You know, lives in this small community, living pretty much the same day in, day out, and it's anyone.
I was going to say at the very start of the film, where even when you look at the trailer, it's, but the thing, the device falls from the sky.
It's a stage light.
When it falls from the sky and he looks at it, is that his first part of the awakening, or is he already in this state? Is he already in this zone? Because the reason I ask that is because when it comes to, he takes her in the car and said, right, guy going back on a bike, woman walking past with flowers, and a beetle with the right door dented. And he said, I'm watching it. They just go round and round and round on a loop. And I'm like, so living in that situation for so long, you've never noticed things are acting like clockwork?
By the time he does that bit where there's a loop, then he's figured it out, or he's, you know, on the cusp of figuring it out. I think we join him when it's really started to unravel, and the main part focus of the film is from that until it has unraveled, obviously, and then, spoiler alert, until he exits the production. So we only really see a snapshot of that end part, but obviously, you know, get the KGB little flashback to things that happened, like when he's a kid and there's some guy jumps out of his Christmas present. You know, there have been these sporadic attempts to kind of infiltrate the set in the past, but I think it's I do think the chain of events is probably properly set off by that relationship he forms that woman, the fact that he always pines after her, the way she was kind of snatched from the beach. But there's obviously a long period of time in between those things too. But I don't think he's like had it all the way through his adult life that it's potentially a lie. It's only, you know, very much towards the end, the last few days, when he picks up on things like the loop and has this kind of essentially what would be a breakdown if it wasn't true, but the fact that it is true kind of validates what he does.
Well, I think you said it too, is that like we're in our reality, a lot of times we easily accept things. And I think the younger you are, the more, you know, prone you are to accept weird things like a guy jumping out of a Christmas box. And even when he was in college. So it could be they started to accumulate. And then as he got like, well, we're assuming like he's in his early 30s or whatever. You know, maybe at that point he starts thinking, it's like, why did all these weird things happen to me? They just don't seem normal. And they could have done something again with production. Like, I guess the first thing that we had seen was the light falling from the sky, where I guess they could have mentioned that something like, oh, well, a light fell off an airplane like 10 years ago or something like that. You know, something that's common that it might happen and you're lucky.
They did justify it, though.
Did mention it.
In the news, on the radio.
Is that what they said? You know, something similar to that?
Yeah, something was falling out of the sky. Yeah, it's just... Yeah, and like all the events that try and stop him from trying to sabotage what they're doing. So they kind of... You know, like the traffic jams and stuff, and then they play on the radio, oh, you know, it's you know, heavy traffic and blah, blah, blah. They're always reacting to how he's acting.
This is what I wanted to, one of the things I wanted to explore a little bit is if you take the premise that they've got this kind of environment that they fully create and they can do that, then it is implausible that he would get to that age and not have figured it out already. And why would they even make that their version of this reality, one where a place like Fiji exists? Why would Chicago, that he gets supposed to get on a bus to, even exist? You know, they control everything. This could be the world. Yeah, they wouldn't have to kind of signal or tell him that there's a big wide world out there.
Oh, like a flat earth thing.
You know, like any kind of science, culture, philosophy, religion, you know, it's all within that. They could have made it harder for him to have figured out that there was a big wider world out there.
True.
I also think the premise of this as being a TV show is flawed as well. So yes, this took place in the late 90s before the rise of, you know, reality TV and Love Island and influencers and all that sort of nonsense.
Brother, but, yeah.
Who would really watch a TV show from when he was between the ages of 0 and 10, when nothing interesting happens? He's just a kid, yeah? I mean, what were the audience numbers when he was 6 months old and lying on his back, filling his nappy? You know,
I mean, you have a good point, but it's also a novelty. It's something that's never been done before. And I guess that's why people would tune in, because it's like, well, yeah, we've never had something like that. Even if it's boring, I'm going to watch it. My question is, this 24 hours, 7 days a week?
Yes.
Supposedly, yeah. That's how it's been filmed, yeah. But it's not necessarily broadcast.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Well, no, I think it is. We don't see... they cut transmission for the first time ever, don't they? Right towards the end when he's escaped. So I think it is like, you know, should you wish to do so, watch him sleep and watch every aspect of his life 24/7, 365.
So we see him having sex, masturbating, shitting, you know.
The sex thing is addressed, isn't it? Because there's they say, oh, you never get to see anything. There's like a curtain wafting in the wind. So it's maybe not that the camera's fully on him 24/7, but, you know, with some exceptions, and I guess that's how they get around some of the realities of what it means to be a human being and all the gross stuff, perhaps, that we do over the course of a 30-year life.
Yeah, Truman goes for a shit. Again,
not think though. Maybe they run a book on it. Nice to go for poo. Do you not think?
Yeah. Well, yes, of course it is. I mean, it's a nice enough activity for that. But if you were doing that, you go right. So we want minute and second, and you would have betting everywhere around the world.
Oh yes, true. I was thinking about that. Like what color is it going to be? Or what density is it going to be?
Oh, get the horses.
Is it a floater? Just be better than that. Flush?
Is it diarrhea?
Yeah. But let's ignore the lavatory aspects of his life. But like, surely, like, one of the interesting things to explore is we're all flawed human beings. Yeah, we've all got our virtuous side and we've all got a good side, but we've also got a, you know, what about the time when he fiddles his expenses? What about the time when he has too much to drink? What about the time when he
behaves
inappropriately? But I think, again, I'm not trying to conflate too many things at once, but if it's genuinely following somebody's life, then that warts and all aspect of what it means to be truly human, to be a man or a woman.
But he wouldn't allow to be
12 or 18 or 30.
Yeah, but he wouldn't allow to be. So the concept of drink, you know, is just, you know, he has a couple of beers with his buddy, you know, and maybe that's what they craft. And they just say, look, if you have any more than like two beers, then three beers, because obviously he brings six packs around all the time. But maybe that's what maybe that's the confines that he's in.
Yeah, it's a point there, but this is a quite classic kind of dilemma, isn't it? To what extent are we the products of our environment, and to what extent could we be controlled and constrained by, you know, being grown, raised in this environment?
As well, it's not just him, is it, that's trapped in there? Because all the other actors have their own parts to play. So
they could leave.
Yeah, but they can't always leave, because if he does something random, they need to be back. If he doesn't go according to plan, and it doesn't, does it? So they need to kind of get people to be where they should be.
That is an interesting point, is that if he suddenly decides, I'm going to get up in the middle of the night, you know, because I want a bit of... I mean, presumably she has to be with him, not 24/7, but she has to be with him until she goes to work. When she goes to work, that's when she has her time off or sleep.
But she has to go to work because he follows her to work.
But as soon as he follows her to work, that's when they go, it's never come to the work before, because now we've got to do a operation, and you get that very awkward scene. And it's like there's places that he hasn't gone to, despite the fact it's a small place, a small town.
I mean, ethically it's a minefield, isn't it? Like she you know, essentially could be called a prostitute in some respects, couldn't she? She's been paid by this corporation, and part of her duties involve having sex with him. But this is nothing compared to the ethical dilemma that his mate faces, his so-called best mate, the one that's, you know, sways him to stay. If everyone was in on it, then I'd have to be in on it as well. Mm. You know, I can't remember his exact quote, but, you know, and Harris is feeding him the lines in his earpiece. You know, I wouldn't lie to you. That's the one thing I'll never do, you know, blatantly and openly lying to him. So, yeah, they are kind of completely corrupted by this whole process, and the whole environment, the whole community is
well, like you said, it's an alternate reality, so this is accepted by society that it's okay to do this for the sake of television. But it does seem like they've tortured him for a big part of his life, like by killing his father and making him afraid of traveling on the ocean.
But it wasn't actually his father, though, was it? It was an actor playing his father.
Well, his actor, but well, yeah,
he was an orphan.
Well, everyone's an actor to him. Yeah.
But they, you know. Like you said in the beginning too, it's like he'd have some hell of a lawsuit once he got out, but who knows? In this alternate reality, it's like, well,
he
we
might
own
go back
you.
In.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. Like it is,
stability.
Like Tom said, it's very similar to the Matrix, and like even the Matrix, like they said, originally they created a perfect world, but people wouldn't accept a perfect world, so there had to be a mix of, you know, good times and bad times in life in order for people to accept it properly. But when you think of like the character Cypher, like he made a deal with the people in the Matrix where they would plug him in and then he'd live as a billionaire and have anything he wanted. And he says, you know, basically ignorance is bliss. And would you do something like that? Now, every time I watch the Matrix, I'm with Cypher. I mean, I wouldn't betray people, but I wouldn't mind not knowing that my morality was true. And I think in the situation like with Truman, I kind of feel that way too. I mean, I know he wants the truth to unfold before his eyes, that, you know, his eyes have been closed for so long, but he also had a pretty good life too. He was loved, beloved and everything. He had a nice wife, it just seemed like he was generally happy, but they would fuck with him every now and then, mostly to kind of keep him away from finding the truth.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
would you guys like to live like the Truman Show?
No way. You know,
well, I don't know. I think I would, you know, as long as a lot of good things happen to me.
I wouldn't go and live in that environment. But if I grew up in that environment, as we pointed out numerous times, you don't know that it's an environment. So would I want to go and live like that? Would I do the billionaire thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
The best film of this type, I think, is Groundhog Day, because there you've got this kind of, you know, some similarities, but essentially you've got this, because he's trapped in that film by a snowstorm, so he can't just get on a jet plane and go to New York City, but he can, you know, do whatever he wants in this town. He can be virtuous, he can be evil, he can eat cream cakes all day, he can rob a bank, he can seduce a woman, he can learn how to play the piano. That I think is the interest. You know, you've got this blank canvas and every day it starts again. What do you do? How do you occupy your time? And you can't kill yourself, or you can't kill yourself, but you just wake up the next day. That I think, if you watch Groundhog Day for entertainment, it's a funny, well-made film, but kind of philosophically, and think about it, that's the one that I think is most interesting, because that's the one that could really get dark. And it does get darker than Truman Show. You know, he does some things there which are, well, you could argue his whole seduction of what's she called, Annie McDowell, is pretty sinister, slightly non-consensual, even though it's presented as a big romantic conclusion.
Yes.
But yeah, that's a fantastic film for that kind of thought experiment of, if I lived a life with no consequences and nothing I did, you know, lasted longer than 24 hours, what would I do? How would I live my life free from constraints and societal norms? That's pretty interesting, I think. And of course, could have been applied to the Truman Show to some extent too. But
the even more disturbing thing when you come to Groundhog Day, I don't know what I want to talk about Groundhog Day, but if you decided to be this malicious, commit loads of crimes, you know, have your way, do everything that you wanted to do, because you're sick and twisted mind by that time, and then that's the day that you don't, that it goes, it flops over onto the next day, you're like, oh. So, you know, whatever cosmic force or whatever, you know, religious intervention on Groundhog Day, you know, it stops when she genuinely loves him.
Yeah, it does. But I think what you're saying there is fear of consequences is what, I'm not saying about you personally, but what is what keeps one on the straight and narrow. You know, they say society is just 24 hours and two square meals away from barbarism, don't they? You know, what is it that makes us behave in the way that we do? And it's the reality that we're presented with. And I think in the film Groundhog Day, which I know we're not discussing today, but I think it's implied that he's there for a number of years. You know, you see the edited highlights of a number of years, and eventually he loses all concern about consequences and the passage of time. He feels he's trapped there forever. And in that story arc, he actually becomes a much better person as a result of it, and that's how he escapes. But yeah, I just think these sorts of films are very, you know, Matrix, Truman Show, Groundhog Day, you know, fascinating to Joe's question, would you want to be in there? And then apply it to our own lives, you know, okay, touch wood, we're hopefully not in a simulation run by AI, but if you were, would you want to know?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I was going to say, too, like when you mentioned Groundhog Day and this movie, they remind me of like the Twilight Zone too. Like you would see something like this, but maybe for half an hour on the Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. And Amanda's point earlier about Black Mirror, which I think is like the Twilight Zone for this, you know, for the current generation, which is fantastic. You know, all right, some better than others, but there's some there that are really thought provoking
and disturbing.
Linger long in the memory, definitely. But yeah, if any listeners haven't checked out Black Mirror, you know, make that your next show, then The Americans after that,
and then Ozark.
Yeah,
after that. Just from a trivia point of view, in 2008, psychiatrists shared that he met five schizophrenic patients and heard of another dozen who believed that their lives were reality TV shows.
Mm.
One patient climbed the Statue of Liberty, believing his high school girlfriend was waiting at the top, which was key to him being able to leave the show that he thought he was in. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm only surprised it's not a dozen, 17 people it's replicated over. I mean, there must be a lot of people that think, is it? I mean, you know, as you pointed out, Don, you know, we talk about the Matrix and stuff, but every once in a while, your mind might drift and go, oh, well, are we? You know, I mean, fleeting time, but yeah, it gets you thinking.
I mean, it makes me wonder too, like, again, if they were doing it with Truman, and you look at how TV is run in our world, where there are different networks, would there be a different network trying to top them by doing something better than the Truman Show? Well, like having a different character other than Truman, maybe a female character or something like that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. And they'd spice it up one day, then there'd be a slightly more sleazy version of it. And but it's true, there's it. Like as per our basic instinct, you know, data points, sex sells, as you rightly say.
Absolutely.
So it does, yeah. I reckon that if the Truman Show was real in this day and age, there'd be a premium version, like an OnlyFans version or something, where you got to see the sex scenes for a $20 a month subscription or something like that. And maybe if they're really disturbed people, you can watch them take a shit or whatever it is that you three latched onto for so long. So, yeah.
They could even like create something like where someone lives in a world where zombies exist, where they try to make them that zombies exist or ghosts exist, and they truly believe that.
There are people that believe that anyway, I think, aren't there?
Well, some do. I don't know about zombies, though.
Ghosts.
So on less philosophical points, like thinking about the film then, two things I wanted just to raise. I think the ending was really good. Lots of times in a film, endings can just kind of peter out and can reach its obvious conclusion. This one, I thought there was some genuine jeopardy. Would he make it? Wouldn't he? You know, the fact that his boat literally hits the wall at the end of the world. I thought that was really effective.
That was a really cool scene. I never get it. I never get like when it's about to hit the wall, because the sky and the ocean look so real at that point.
The conversation between Jim Carrey and Ed Harris, and incidentally, I believe they never met during filming as well. So it's kind of like talking to effectively God. You know, this moment when, you know, it's, in reality, I'm sure a human being wouldn't be able to cope with that level of shock that he'd be going through at that point. But anyway, you know, he does. And then the fact that he opens the door, and I like it, Joe, that he doesn't then enter a fist fight with some, you know, studio production people, or there's not a big romantic encounter with his soon-to-be girlfriend. You know, I like the fact he's does a bow and walks out. I thought the ending for this film is fantastic.
No, it was good. It gives it
a higher score almost.
A little ambiguous. I mean, because yeah, he could have met like a security group and they could have beat the crap out of him, or he could have met the love of his life like as soon as he walked out, or he could have walked into like a ghetto or like a bad area or something like that. You never know. You just kind of like hope that for the best for him, and then he has a good life after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are we doing like trivia intertwined with
yeah stuff? Of course, yeah, if you've got okay. some.
So, you know, at the end when he's on the boat, he actually nearly died while filming the scene.
Okay.
He said, I don't know if you can see in the film, but they've got divers under the water. And he says, I'm actually giving the signal of like, I'm in trouble, which is a clenched fist. They just saw it as acting. He says, I went under, no breath left, and I was drowning. I was under the water at the bottom of the pool, and with the last breath, with the last hint of consciousness, I just spun and made a couple of gigantic strokes towards the back of the storm and came up outside the storm, gasping for air and exhausted. He said, I just barely made it to the edge of the wall where the sky is. Hung on the edge of the wall, gasping for air, looking back at the storm that was raging still. And it went on for another minute, and then it slowly shut down. They didn't know where I was, and then they finally saw me and came over. I almost died. That was the real deal.
Blimey. But
as I said with Sharon Stone last time, I think he's full of shit.
Do you think?
Yeah, I don't buy that stuff. What? Especially from him. I'm sorry, you know. Oh. I think he
I thought it was a great story.
Tells some yarns. No, it's a great story, but I just don't buy it.
Okay.
I think we would have heard more of it. Like, we would have heard about that a long time ago. If that was the case.
Unless they stopped him from talking about it. But that was in an interview to Vanity Fair. But, you know, the twins in the film?
Yes.
They were really weird, really annoying. They were actually policemen who were hired to direct traffic around the movie set and ended up with a spot in the film.
That's good casting.
Yeah, he said, they said at one point, we got carried away and pushed Jim Carrey too hard. And he said, not so rough, guys. He said, and then when we finished, we got applause from the cast and crew. And yeah, it was just one of those accidental actor moments, I guess.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I like from the, for my two pieces of trivia, my two penny, Siskel and Ebert, when they reviewed the film, then they not only gave the film two thumbs up, but they gave an on-air apology to Jim Carrey saying he'd never have a career after Ace Ventura.
No.
And, well, do you know, every time that we've introduced a lot of Siskel and Ebert in here, and yeah, they've been wrong on a lot of counts, it makes me wonder how, you know, they ever, I mean, they've been, had some serious wrong opinions.
Wrongings.
No, they were super popular over here. I mean, and we did listen to what they said a lot of times.
Is Ebert, Roger Ebert, who then went kind of just went off by himself? Is that the same person?
Yeah, because Siskel passed away.
Well, that Roger Ebert's my favourite reviewer, bar none. I think he's brilliant. If you know, whenever I'm doing prep for these pods, I always read his review because I think he's fantastic. I think he won the Pulitzer Prize ultimately, didn't he, for his critical capabilities?
They were wrong.
No, yeah, at times
they were right.
Yeah, but I remember watching the episode when they reviewed Cable Guy. And I am fairly certain that one of them despised the movie.
Well, and so, yeah, there you go. So it took until this point for them to go, well, he seems to have had a career. And even by Cable Guy, Dumb and Dumber? Yeah, you know, it had taken off. The other piece of trivia I had, which is just going back to what we were talking about earlier, when Truman goes to the travel agency, the travel agent apologizes for being late and is wearing a bib. What did you think from that? Do you think, and she says, I've just come in from lunch. She removes it the second he notices it. But unbeknownst to Truman, the woman's late because she's an actress who's never played the role before and had to prepare because didn't know he was coming to the travel agency. So the bib she's wearing is a makeup bib.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
And other on-screen personalities wear makeup artists fix their faces so that you see it throughout. And the other interesting thing, which may spark how did it make its money? The old ladies who watch the show wear the same robe as Meryl because everything in the Truman Show is for sale.
Oh.
So you do have your product placements in there. But
yeah, you do,
Everything for sale? Wow.
I thought it was kind of weird, too. It seemed like that guy lived in his bathtub.
Yeah. When this water keep getting cold, it'd be well wrinkled.
It looked a bit manky.
Hmm.
I also had a question about the photograph that he put together, like kind of like a Frankenstein's monster of the girl that he was in love with.
Oh, yeah.
What was that all about? And like, why would they leave clues to that character for him?
Because they know that he's doing it.
How do you mean leave clues, Joe, though? What do you mean by that point?
Well, because he was only able to find like her eyes and like one area and then her nose and another one. And
I don't think it was literally like the same actress.
It's not her, but he was trying to build
what
she might have looked like.
He wants to look at a photo sort of depiction of her, I guess, because he misses her.
Yeah, so he gets like the closest ears or nose that he can find on one magazine. And when he finds another one, he compares and contrasts and eventually builds up this like, you know, photo fit idea of her, which, you know, is slightly creepy and weird. I mean, we've all done it, haven't we, of course, but but that was the only bit that was a bit clunky, but you know, perhaps a nice little plot device, is a visual representation of what he's thinking rather than just it all being in his head. But what did we all think of the love story then? I've gone out and said I think actually when you rewatch it several times like I have, it becomes, for me, we've talked about all the philosophical elements of this film, which are really important, but I do think it's a love story. And did you think it was believable, plausible, at least within the context of the film?
Yes, and the reason why is because, and you know, you've got the irony, and it is irony, when Harry Shearer is interviewing Christoph, goes, thank you very much, because I know you like your privacy. Thank you very much for this very rare occasion to actually have an interview with you. The first available chance she gets in to dial in, she dials in. and basically starts and is protesting. You can't treat him like this. You're a Philistine and you can't do all this. And instead of cutting her off, he actually engages with her and talks with her. That's the act of someone that feels the same way back. That she's kind of like fighting for him. You can see in the background, she's got the posters of the rally, the Free Truman rally meetups and things that she's obviously organized. And, you know, the movement that maybe she's part of, maybe she started. But, you know, you've got somebody there that is basically fighting for him and is watching all the time. And any clues that she sees, she's probably watching more than anybody else is.
Mm.
But waiting for the time where he does the latest thing and, you know, he fawns over this photo and just pines for her. Mm.
The other thing that
kind of troubles me in that sense is they want him to love Laura. Obviously, they want him to have the relationship with his wife. And then when she says, I can't do this anymore. I can't be expected to live like this. And she's going to be phased out. And you see his new love being introduced at the office. The plan was always for him to have a kid. So, you know, when you talked about, you know, the prostitute angle, how does that come in? So, you know, there's love on one side between the two of them and the forced love on this other side, which is basically the woman's going to have to be a surrogate that has no feelings for him whatsoever.
And that scene where they're dancing at the ball and his true love is dancing with his best mate and he's dancing with Meryl and the glimpses over the dance floor, you know, I think it's really, really well done. And again, you know, I'd say she's a beautiful actress and that helps, but Jim Carrey pulls that off quite well. It's, you know, understated, I think. And that unrequited love over an extended period of time, it's where I lose all credibility. But I thought it was really romantic and I thought it was really well done and quite moving in places. I really did.
I was kind of torn that I felt that maybe she could have had a little more screen time, like a little more interaction with him. Like maybe he went into a grocery store or something like that and she just happened to pass by like one of the aisles or something. Because like when you think about it, he saw her in high school, he saw her at the dance. And then I'm assuming he saw her maybe in college.
In the library. She saw him in the library.
In the library. So was that like three times?
Yeah.
And maybe there were more. I don't know. But I just think that they could have had like a more engaging conversation, you know, for me to buy.
Joe, what about the scene when he's asking out and he plucks up the courage to ask her on a date and, you know, next week, next Tuesday, next Wednesday, it's Thursday, you know, he wants her to do it and she just writes on the
that's a good
page
scene.
Now, you know, that tugged at the heartstrings. Sometimes in life you just have to jump, don't you? And that was wonderful, I thought. Yeah, you're right, Jess. Sorry, no, it sounds like a poo-poo your idea. No, I would like to have seen more of her. I definitely would. And there's some backstory there that I think would have brought it, but sometimes perhaps less is more. And the fact that you know, he only had these glimpses of her, this fleeting time, and then regressed that, lived the rest of his life longing for her. And then obviously this big redemption arc when eventually he finds, well, you know, although we don't see it, he finds her again, and unless he's an absolute basket case, which he could well be by that, at the end of it, then hopefully they find what they're looking for and she helps him get through the inevitable.
She gets hit by a bus on the way there or something.
Yeah.
God, don't do that.
Tragedy. Yeah. I don't know. Something I wanted to explore, because obviously I talked about earlier on my review about, you know, I'd prefer it to have been a bit darker. Sort of touching on that topic, Andrew Niccol wrote the original script. At first, it wasn't going to be such a family-friendly movie. So Truman had a drinking problem.
Mm.
Okay. He was cheating on his wife with a prostitute.
Yeah, it's too... Dark.
But he didn't obviously know that it was the worst kept secret in the world since the affair was being televised. And in another scene, he fails to intervene in an assault on the subway. So it was supposed to be set not on a seaside town, but in a city that resembled New York. But the director, Peter Weir, he'd had concerns about the dark tone of everything and also the cost of building like a New York set, and said, why would millions tune in 24/7 to watch something grim and depressing. So I guess there's a point there.
Was this based on a book or was it just an original story?
No,
for
it's
an
original script.
It went very impressive. Through,
I think it was about 14 rewrites. So yeah, because when they cast Jim Carrey, it was originally going to be a teenage boy. In the original sort of script, but they obviously did the film with him and he wasn't he was older, so yeah.
Did you guys see that? Like I didn't look, but like who was almost cast as in Jim Carrey's role or in any of the major roles?
Didn't go into that, no.
Okay.
I think he's definitely it's one of those ones where we could discuss it, but then looking at the performance that he gives, I wouldn't want anybody else to be in that role.
You're going to hate this, and perhaps it's a bit obvious, but Tom Hanks could have played this role, I think.
Yeah, I could see that. Mm. But I'm glad he didn't, but I could see that.
Yeah, Saving Private Ryan and The Truman Show in the same Oscar billing. See?
What about Tom Cruise?
Yeah. No.
Too good looking.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. Bill Murray.
Oh, for God's sake. No, because it would be too much like Groundhog Day, wouldn't it?
Is that a bad thing? Having just watched Lost in Translation again, yes. Now, there's a film where Bill Murray exercises his acting chops. And I know most of you, probably all of you, think it's overrated. But
I definitely think it's overrated, yeah.
I mean, I just look and seeing Gary Oldman was, I guess, brought in originally to play Truman for the test.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, but that would never have worked.
That would have been the New York one, I think.
I don't know, because Oldman was much younger back then. And he is very good. I mean, he's kind of a chameleon. Yeah.
I just see. I was right. Carry on.
No, I'm just reading. You guys carry on.
Right, Charlie. We're going to save our listeners from just watching us look at
what you're sorry. Google. Yeah. Watching Google.
Bring us home.
We do need to bring it home. And, you know, we discussed quite a lot. And I just wonder if any of the scores that we've given. Anyway, any of the scores that we've given have changed?
No,
we haven't.
Oh, Amanda, you're
shifted the needle slightly.
Bang average 5 out of 10, yeah?
Yeah.
Even if you don't feel it fulfills its potential, then at least it has the ambition that of a higher scoring film, no?
No.
Mm. Okay. Proud.
I'm going to change my score.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm going to join you guys. I'll give it a 9.
Oh, Joe, welcome. Welcome, Joe.
Oh,
right.
I might have to drop my score.
Now.
To fix the average.
I'm not that horrible. No, I wouldn't do that. That's still a 5 for me.
Okay. Well.
I'll probably get hate messages now, won't I? Feedback. Why is she giving it a 5?
I might think people who agree with you.
I think if you ever bump into Fran, I don't think I think you may have to keep an arm's length.
Just before we move on to whatever we're doing next week, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that as well, let's just say just a thank you to Fran as well for introducing us to this film or suggesting this film.
Yes.
It's a philosophical discussion that we've had.
Great.
Yes, thank you, normal,
and in my world, at least, a world where your life can change with that encounter there. So that's been a brilliant choice, Fran. So thank you for that. I hope you've kept your car on the road and I hope you've enjoyed the order that we've done justice for you.
And what would Fran give it? We don't. This is what we need to know.
She can tell Dom and then we'll update you.
She can add it to her YouTube comments. So keep an eye. If anyone's curious, she'll add it to the YouTube comments. I'm
going to go with, she picked Fargo and she picked The Truman Show. So she picked two good films in different categories. So I'm thinking that she's an 8.
You wouldn't pick a film that's crap.
No, but she might have picked
a film that she likes. It's a 10. Yes. Surely.
No, I don't think it is. I think even Fran thinks there's flaws in it. So I reckon maybe one down from...
You're assuming now.
Well, the only way that we'll find out...
She's very discerning. I'll say that. So let's see what she says. Fran, put your comments in the box.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say for everybody to leave comments, let us know what your score is, or email Charlie, let him know what your score is, and we'll see if anybody's lower than Amanda's.
Yeah, like in surprise. And now we proved that, if you want to write in, as we said at the start of the podcast, you want to write in and recommend something. We do have another recommendation that's going to come up. So after the next crunch of films, it's going to be...
sounds like you're punishing our listeners. After the next long slog in their films, then it's a glimmer of light.
It's only Joe that puts films in that makes it a long slog, like Popeye.
Look, come on, let's
and
not,
you,
let's not fall
legend.
Out.
I'm looking at you as well, legend. So yeah.
So come on, then. Foreplay. What's our film next time around today?
Right. So it's not listener's choice. It's my choice, and my choice is we're staying with 1998. We're going all the way back to the start of Marvel. We are going to be choosing the tattoo that I have on my arm. For those that are...
Oh, it's Blade.
We are going to be watching and discussing Blade.
Oh, cool. I've never seen Blade 2. So, I'm the Marvel guy.
You've never seen Blade 2? Or you said Blade?
Blade 2, Blade 3, and Blade 1. I've never seen any of them.
Don't watch Blade 3. It's dreadful in lots.
Well,
what
it is. I know the character Blade, and it's just not interesting to me because he's just basically a vampire hunter, and I don't know. I don't find that as a superhero.
He's a superhero. Let's get that out of the box pretty quickly. He's a superhero.
He's no Spider-Man. He's no Thor. He's no Iron Man. No Captain America. He's a vampire hunter, and for me, I don't care. Never picked up his comic books, but I am fascinated to watch the movie. I always wanted to watch it.
I'm glad I've got,
I don't ever think I've sat down and watched the whole thing either. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm not a big fan of, unlike Joe, Marvel and comic books and things in general. So my heart sank a bit when we said Marvel, but yeah, Blade, I've heard it's all right. So yeah, I look forward to that.
Heard it's all right. That should be the tag.
Rest in joke of it. But it's all right.
This is where the AI picks up what I'm about to say. It's got porn star Tracy Lords in it.
Oh.
And that's where the AI goes. And they also discuss. Right. No, not at all. AI, shush. Stop analyzing me.
Are we going to do Tracy Lords in roll call then?
We are. Yes.
Right. That'd be tricky. Well, there are
many, many films.
You'll have to do some research on that then, hey, Dom?
No. She's, nope. I will not be doing that. It's too much sex in her pornos for me, Amanda, so I can't watch that. Me, I'm quite the prude.
It happened on more than one occasion. Sorry, this is how people get nicknames. Just happened. It wasn't just basic instinct, something else. Anyway, on that note. Right, so the next time we'll be discussing Blade. All that's left is to say thank you very much. Please like and subscribe. Tell your friends. Broadcast it on your CB radios, whatever you want to do. Breaker. Subscribe to Rusted Junk. Thank you. Anyway, I'm going to take this time to say cheerio.
See ya.
Something, good morning, good evening, good night.
Toodle pip.